This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Good afternoon. I'm Lisa Labas, and this is The Rundown. U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Cummings in Chicago today ordered the release of as many as 615 people who have been held in mandatory detention by federal immigration authorities. Detainees were arrested in the Midwest. It's not clear how many remain in the United States. The government wouldn't be required to release these people until November 21st. Judge Cummings today says he will not allow the release of anybody who poses a high risk to public safety. That ruling was handed down today in a federal courtroom in Chicago. A U.S. representative from Illinois is on the House committee that has released emails today from convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. My colleague Mawa Iqbal reports the three emails mention President Donald Trump. One from Epstein calls the president a, quote, dog that hasn't barked, and says Trump spent hours at Epstein's house with one of the alleged sex trafficking victims. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy of Illinois says the public deserves more answers.
What's astonishing is when you see the emails in their native format and just how casual, you know, Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell are talking about Trump. It feels like it's almost a very familiar topic to them.
Krishnamoorthy is running in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate against U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, and others. The Chicago Transit Authority today has closed the door on fare increases for next year. The Sun-Times reports the CTA now joins the Regional Transportation Authority in walking back these proposed hikes. Both organizations changed tracks after the state legislature passed a $1.5 billion transit funding bill last month. Board members say they still have questions about when funds from the state might arrive. And 50 years ago this month, rival movie critics Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert debuted their Chicago-based hit TV show Sneak Previews. Now, the program had a few rules. For instance, Siskel and Ebert didn't wear suits. That was kind of stuffy. And they stuck to discussing what the audience could actually see on the screen, things like acting and costumes. Chicago historian Paul DeRica tells our In the Loop program the show transformed how people talk about the movies.
You know, it was created right here in Chicago, but its influence extended so far beyond that. And I think it's something that the city should feel very proud about.
To honor that legacy, DeRica and others put together a month-long celebration at the Chicago Cultural Center, and it includes a recreation of an episode of Sneak Previews. You're listening to The Rundown. While violent crime in Chicago has declined, there is one category that continues to rise persistently: domestic violence. It skyrocketed during pandemic-era stay-at-home orders, and it continues to plague the city. Yet as federal COVID-19 relief grants are drying up, organizations that support survivors are bracing for drastic cuts to city-funded programming they say has changed lives. My colleague Mariah Wolfel has more on what's next. And just a note before we start, this story contains one woman's description of her domestic assault.
In 2019, Tanelle Taylor was woken up in the middle of the night by a man who began stalking her in pursuit of an unwanted romantic relationship.
It happened in my apartment at 4 a.m. in the morning.
He brutally attacked her, at one point with scissors, while one of her young sons was in the other room. She was eventually able to call the police, and he was later convicted. But after the attack, Taylor knew she had to move apartments, in part because of traumatic flashbacks.
I had no other choice but to leave the unit because every time I'm there, it's rewind. It's like an episode of someone coming through your window and they're beating you out of your sleep. And then they're taking scissors and want to cut your throat. That's a nightmare. That's something that every time I would look there, I never had peace.
Taylor, whose real full name we aren't using for her security, became homeless after the attack as she searched for help. She was eventually able to find an apartment with the help of a city-funded rapid rehousing program. But that program is at risk of being cut nearly in half as the city faces financial woes due to overwhelming debt, rising labor costs, and expiring federal funding. In fact, money for gender-based violence programs is dropping a whopping 43% next year. Let me explain why. In 2022, the city got a windfall of COVID-19 relief dollars, millions of which went to propping up new programming to support survivors.
It felt like a long overdue investment instead of like a stopgap measure to get us through.
That's Sarah Layden, who helps lead Resilience, a rape crisis center. While that funding was always set to run out, advocates had hoped the city would find new revenue by the time it did to sustain the money.
Because you're dealing with a sector that was so severely underfunded, like in the first place, the need has always outweighed what is available of in services.
But instead, that federal COVID-19 money will disappear completely next year. Another crucial funding stream will also plummet, a 2% tax on Airbnb rentals that goes to domestic violence funding. Last year, the city spent down the fund's reserves amid an overwhelming demand for services, which means fewer dollars this year. So what does that mean for the city's programming? Deputy Commissioner for Gender-Based Violence Danny Castaneda says the city will be able to maintain all of its 14 programs, but they will shrink dramatically in how many people they can serve.
When we get asked the question, what are your core programs? We say all of them because they all are really feeding into each other. So without one or more of these programs, the sort of gaps in the safety net become larger and we're missing survivors.
These programs include emergency funding for fleeing victims, rental assistance like Taylor received, prevention education in CPS schools for kids to learn about things like unwanted touch. The cuts won't necessarily affect people like Taylor, who are currently benefiting, but there are thousands of survivors who won't get help next year if funding plummets, says Jackie Korieth, a leader at The Network, a policy organization for domestic violence advocates. She says she talks to 10-plus people like Taylor every day who are trying to flee a scary situation.
We may be on the phone with someone who's worried they're going to be killed. They have no safe space to go. And as resources dwindle, our options are very limited in how we can help that person. And I think those are the stories and the people that keep me and my team up at night because we're worried about what will happen to them. Will we talk to them the next day? Will they be okay? And those are the things that worry me when I worry about the cuts.
So is the city considering any other options? So far, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is tying the funding that is included in the budget to a new corporate head tax proposal. His team says he's considering increasing the share of revenue from that tax for survivor services. But the tax itself is facing serious city council opposition. Alderperson Samantha Nugent is one of those opposing aldermen who is simultaneously calling on Johnson not to cut domestic violence funding.
We have to find some revenue to be able to fund the things that we think are very important. I'm not a fan of the head tax.
She and others call the head tax a job killer, and they're urging Johnson to find more efficiencies in the budget instead. Johnson's team claims they've already done so. Advocates are calling on Johnson to increase that Airbnb surcharge from 2% to 4%, and his spokesperson says that's also under consideration. As for Taylor, the survivor of the 2019 attack in her home, she had a really simple answer when I asked about the city allowing these funds to plummet.
They should not do that.
She then quickly turned to praise the organization that helped her find her new apartment. The stability enabled her to find a full-time job. Her kids, who were living with other family members after the attack, now have their own rooms in her home.
You all embrace people and you help people. You brought my family back to one. If it wasn't for you all, I would still be outdoors.
Budget negotiations are underway, and the council will have to pass a spending plan by the end of the year. Mariah Wolfel, WBEZ News.
Weather, pretty nice outside, sunny, windy, a little milder, a high in the low 50s, and then clear and cold tonight, low in the mid-30s, and then sunny on Thursday with a high again in the mid-50s. You can find the latest news whenever you want at WBEZ.org or on your radio at 91.5 FM. I'm Lisa Labas. Thanks for listening.